Do you want to help your children learn about true history, personal freedom, responsibility, and individual rights? Then check out the Tuttle Twins books through my link. We read these books often, and I'm always impressed at how they bring these big concepts down to a place a kid can understand. Even I'm learning as I read. Like book number 4, Food Truck Fiasco, in the ages 5 through 11 series. The Tuttle Twins have a lemonade stand, and through real-life context, they learn what regulations the government puts on their neighbor with a food truck. The book explains how many laws and rules are put in place to help big companies hurt their competition. Grab my link in the show notes, TuttleTwins.com/REF/CHERYL, and use code Cheryl40 for 40% off all products for kids ages 5 through 11. That's TuttleTwins.com/REF/CHERYL and code CHERYL40 for 40% off. Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families from all over to help me unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome, and with us today we have Tasha Fishman. Tasha is from Unschooling Our Kids, and I am so excited to have you here today. Tasha, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to start by having you tell us how many kids you have and what their ages are.
Sure. Yeah, I have 3 sons. Yeah, one's 20, one's 12, and one is 10.
Nice. So Have you homeschooled from the beginning?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I couldn't imagine that. I would have, when I did imagine it prior to 2020, it sounded like a nightmare. So I was definitely what you would call the quintessential matrix mummy, running around, schlepping my kids to school, being involved with the bake sales, the orange shirt days, the this, the that, running like a mad woman, trying to get all the things done on somebody else's schedule and timeline. And it wasn't until my spiritual awakening in 2020 that I knew I had to make a huge change.
I have followed you for a little while now on Instagram, and I really love your posts. And I think we have sort of similar stories. You maybe just got there a little quicker on the schooling aspect. My eyes started opening to things. I was the super like liberal, you know, go Obama, go Hillary. Like, and I should say I'm in America. I'm in upstate New York. You are in what part of Canada?
Canada. Yeah. I'm in British Columbia and Alberta. I kind of go back and forth, but.
So, And my eyes kind of opened up, and then I went over to, you know, the Trump side of things. And then now I'm in the place where it's all corrupt. They're the same, they're being controlled by the same people, and they're the pawns in this. So now it's trickled down to, okay, what does this mean for me in my life? Because I can't obviously change our politics, our government, myself. What can I do? And so it was, okay, I can change the way we approach life in our home, in our family. So I haven't started the homeschool process yet. My son is he'll be 5 in a month. So this will be the start of our journey. And I never, ever imagined myself homeschooling. I didn't even imagine myself sending my kids to private school. I was like, oh my goodness, those hoity-toity people that, you know, what's wrong with diversity? And, you know, we pay taxes. Why would you not send them to public school? And then now that my eyes have been opened up to sort of the Rockefeller infiltration of our education system, it is now I can't imagine sending them to any school and having them be part of that. What did that journey look like for you?
Well, I mean, you're right on the money there. Like, you know, like Malcolm X says, only a fool would let his enemy educate his children. And it's very true. And it took me a while as well to figure out who the enemy was. And, you know, that program that you're talking about, I too, up here in Canada, although it wasn't Democrat and Republican, you know, I considered myself slightly conservative, but very liberal, like in my ideology about, you know, how we take care of people. I was a social worker for 10 years. So I was right in there with what they were saying. And, oh, yeah. And I remember hearing when I had boys at the beginning about toxic masculinity and thinking, well, my boys won't be like that. And I took them to the women's marches and stuff. And they held up signs that says pink is just a color. You know, I was right in there. I wouldn't say that I was extreme by any means. Like I didn't know or hear at that time. I mean, the whole gender ideology contagion, social contagion is a new thing. And luckily my kids have been out of school since that really has been brought on. So I didn't have to face those things, but I was well on my way to, you know, being a virtue signaling minion, just like so many others that we're seeing, because they know the people that rule us and some of the family names that you just mentioned. They have been studying us for a long, long time. And this has been a long war. We're just waking up to it. And there's a big club and we're just not part of it. And they've been planning on and using social engineers and corporate technocracy to steer the herd in the ways that benefit them.
Absolutely.
So it's a very deep programming. And it actually starts when we're in school, because the minute we walk into school, as you and I have, and we've been raised in that institution, we are immediately taught that we have no boundaries. Do not question authority. Raise your hand when you want to speak. Everything you do will be dictated in a series of, you know, five subjects over this many time. We're going to tell you when to eat, when you can go to the washroom, when you can sit, when you can talk to your partners, you know, and don't fall out of line, because someone's going to tell on you. And so all of this has been conditioned into us. So for myself, I remember the kids missing the bus a few times and being like, oh, mommy, will you homeschool us? And I was like, over my dead body, I'm thinking, throw them in the car and I drive them to school, because my life at that time was impossible to imagine homeschooling. I loved working in our family business with my husband. I loved my free time. I loved, you know, having a lunch once in a while with a girlfriend. That was my time, right? To get groceries, to do all the things. And then, you know, of course, once I got them from the clutches of school, I was ready to outsource them to activities and other people to play with them or coach them or whatever that was. I mean, so my entire life was becoming me driving them from one thing to another, not spending any actual real time with them or getting to know what kind of learners they actually are, what their passions are. Their life is pretty much set out before them. And I had no idea, because I was trained and conditioned that that's what you do when you're a good parent.
Yes.
I mean, how else are you going to raise your children to be, you know, happy, constructive citizens of society if you don't send them to school? So yep. Meanwhile, fast forward 3 years, and I've come to understand that I don't even homeschool. I unschool. That's a completely different thing. And I've come to understand not only the foundations of compulsory school and the evil behind it and that it is there to entrain the next generations of slaves, but I've also realized and rejected the entire curriculum that they've set to standardize our children and compare them with everybody else. It's just another way to keep us, like, we are these infinite multidimensional beings that through our passions and our interests and even our obstacles will create things for us, and we can manifest anything, and we love learning, and school is actually designed to kill and squash that. So once you realize that, and that took me a while, I mean, this was just basically mm-hmm. like out of necessity. I had this spiritual awakening. I saw the absurdity of public health in lockstep with our education system and governments. And I was like, danger. I got to get them out of here. I don't know what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to be a homeschooler. I'm going to get all the stuff. I'm going to bring it home. And, you know, my kitchen looked like, you know, a kindergarten classroom. And away we went, and it was an epic fail. It lasted 3 days. They didn't want to do the work. I didn't understand why. I tried to coerce them. Then there was some bribing, then maybe some yelling. And I like literally was defeated, thinking, what have I done? I can't go back, but I have no idea where I'm going. And luckily, I was able to fall onto a podcast just like this with Dana Martin and Kelly Brogan. And she spoke about unschooling. And I just fell in love with the essence of freedom, of which I could see that she had. And I didn't even know that was possible. And just from that podcast, that sent me down. Oh, I mean, she became my coach. You know, I worked with her for years. I still do. And it just completely blew open my mind that there is another more beautiful way to live with your children, and learning is just the byproduct.
So I want you to tell us about the unschooling. But like for myself, my vision of unschooling is, oh, well, we're going to go outside today and whatever my son or daughter finds and finds interesting, then we go and learn about it. But I mean, is that like packing everybody up in the car and driving to the library and looking for a book, or going online using this internet that's a little bit evil but can be a little bit good too? And, you know, like what? So it's a very convoluted idea, I know, that I have of this in my head, because it's probably much easier. But walk us through what a day looks like for unschooling.
Right. So every day looks like a Saturday. Feels like a Saturday, I should say. You know, you wake up, my kids wake up when their bodies tell them to, which is the most amazing thing of all. I love that the most, because I spent years schlepping them, getting them up at 6:30 in the morning to have them out the door and, you know, run the Matrix program. And so they wake up when they want. I get up very, very early in order that I can do things like this, and I can work and I can work out and kind of fill my bucket before they get up. So I'm kind of a 4:45 a.m.er. And that's changed everything too, because I really advocate that self-care is the number one thing when it comes to homeschooling or unschooling for the primary parent. So we do, right, we travel a lot. So we're very transient. We're in and out of Calgary and Invermere and Creston, where my parents have an acreage. So that's our life. The point of unschooling is that you reestablish a connection with your children, and you choose and you find a rhythm that works for you and your family. So there's not a lot of studies, because typically unschooling families don't like to be prodded about anything. So there's no studies like there are with, you know, the average people, but you know, there's lots of stories that we share, and it really looks different for everybody. But the feeling of it is like a Saturday, if I can explain that, when I try to explain it. It's like we get up, they get up, they have breakfast. What do you guys want to do today? If there's nothing on the books, like we have a calendar, they each have their own calendar. Usually at the beginning of the year, this year we did like a Mandela, and it was like all the different things that you want to explore and learn and do and think about and things that you're already doing. And then it kind of branches off in different subsections, and you can take that and have this fun, creative Mandela. And then when you have to meet with your homeschool educator, you have to write a program for whoever you're accountable to. That's a totally different podcast, because I'm working on not being accountable to anyone in the government, as the true anarchist that I am. But what you have to do is you have to do it until you can't, or there's another solution. So, you know, we have this Mandela, and it talks about all these different things that they can do, and we either do them or we don't. And sometimes we look at it and say, oh, well, what should we do from our thing? But, you know, once you really reconnect with your children, you know, you start to understand what they like and what they're interested in. It's not, yeah, do we go to the library or the bookstore some days? Sure we do. When they run out of books, or they want to, or there's something, you know, or if we're going to meet some people there. But it's not having to fill space. So one of the biggest things that I learned was I don't need to be entertaining my children 24/7. Like once I came out of the system, it took me a long time to understand that. Like I was constantly like, okay, we need to be doing this. Okay, let me plug in this. And because I've been so conditioned to be on a timetable of somebody else's doing and adhering to somebody else's timeline and constraints, that felt natural and normal to me, and just being with them didn't. Right. And so a lot of this work is coming back to your soul. It's like the way, you know, God, whoever you want to speak, the divine Gaia, the source, intended us to live with our children. I mean, they came here to be with us, not to be handed over to the state. Interestingly enough, you said that your son is going to be 5. So you've been a natural unschooling parent from 0 to 5. So when you want to know how it was, just think about the last 5 years of your life. You weren't sitting there thinking, oh, I've got to write these things down and I got to get them to do this and we have to get this by this time. And, you know, most unschooling kids, and people are just shocked by this, don't actually start reading until the ages of 9, in between 9 and 12. And that just like blows people's mind open. Like, how could you ever live? Like, how could you survive? Well, it's easy when you're not having to adhere to a curriculum which adheres to a board, which adheres to a ministry, which adheres to the WEF and all of these globalists who actually just want a one world school so that they can centrally control us and create their automatons for the next, you know, generations to come. So you know, it really, it looks like freedom and it smells like freedom. And it is, it's, but you, in order to get there, you have to, as the parent, make some major paradigm shifts, right? Because people won't understand that coming from inside the matrix still. And I wouldn't have understood it. And I didn't, I had to do the work. I mean, we can do the work as parents to really lead the way here, but we, and get out of their way. Now, I'm not saying that my kids aren't going to do classes and stuff and other things. Of course they have. This one's trying art classes. This one loves to ski. This one loves math. So he's in a math program online. But we do what they want to do when they're lit up about it. You know, sometimes that might mean at 9 o'clock at night, they want to start some kitchen experiment. Well, you need to be there when they're ready, because it's in that fire of that passion, of that curiosity, is when you step in to help.
You gave me chills there. And there's two things that you said that I want to bring points to. I had an episode previously with Chris from 6-7 Podcast where we really got into the history of education. And he had mentioned, and I knew about the Rockefellers infiltrating it in the early 1900s, but he had mentioned, I think it was Nelson, I'm not even going to say which Rockefeller, but it was in the 50s, when they brought in America a universal education system, like the same thing taught in third grade in New York is going to be the same thing taught in third grade in California. And it was presented to us as, well, that's so if you move, your kid isn't behind. Everybody gets the same equal opportunity. And because we didn't have a one way, that a universal way that it was before that. And it was this woman previously that was in charge of that. You know, she looked like Betty White, grandma, you know, they gave her the position. And then within 3 years, they gave it to a Rockefeller. And someone asked him, well, you make millions of dollars, and this was back in the 50s, why would you take a job that makes $20,000 a year? And he had a comment that had something to say like, well, basically, it's priceless to get a hold of the children this early on. And his comment was probably, you know, two-faced. It looked, oh, isn't that, what a, you know, wonderful man. He cares so much. But no, because it's going to make me more money later, is probably what he meant behind it. So it's just there over and over again. It's the same families with the same goal, if we open our eyes to see it. And what you were talking about is going with what they want to learn when they have the light in their eye to learn it. I mean, it's like with the reading. Well, if a five-year-old doesn't care about reading a book, he just likes mommy to sit with him and read it to him, that's probably because he wants time with mommy or daddy, you know? He wants it to be a group thing, because maybe they even think, well, once I learn to read on my own, mommy won't sit with me anymore. So there's a lot of layers to that. And then when he gets to be 9 or 10 and, oh, well, hey, I want to know how to put together my, you know, monster truck or something. Well, maybe that's when the context comes to him that, okay, well, in order to read these instructions, I do need to know how to read. And then when there's a will and a desire, it comes much easier. And it's not this badgered into your head, you need to learn the letter A and what does A say? And what, you know, sometimes it says this, sometimes it says that. It's like, what does a five-year-old care? So you're automatically teaching him that learning is hard and something that, you know, he puts in his mind, I don't want to do it, from a very early age. Second thing you said was, we have programmed that to be a good mom, we're taking them here, we're taking them there. And it is so true. And I got thinking about it. One of your posts that I had seen before was getting rid of all of the alcohol, even caffeine. I mean, I don't think I can go that far yet, but but it's so true. These things that are put in our head to, you know, sedate us or just change the way our mind is supposed to naturally go. And I remember saying to myself the other night, like, oh, I need a glass of wine because I feel in the day that I'm pulled here, I'm pulled there, I'm pulled there. Laundry, groceries, cooking, cleaning, making sure that you're having time for your children. But then like the having a glass of wine, it's like, well, that's a time for myself. But when you think about it in terms of you need to be there for your kids, if they have a whim at 9 at night, that's when they want to learn about something. Something like having a glass of wine is taking that away from our children. We're like robbing our children of it, you know? And I know there's extremes that we can get to, but just the simple, when you start thinking about these concepts of what's been introduced to us and what has become normal to us from the shows that we watch on TV or the movies or the ads, it is all by design that, you know, you really get kind of angry when you think about it. Like, oh my God, I fell for that too.
No, 100%. You nailed it. So there is a group of people, a small group of people compared to the 7 billion of us on this planet that own 98% of the world's resources and benefit from us making the worst decisions for ourselves and our families. And this is not a money thing. These people have had money their entire lives. This is a spiritual war. And this is an entitlement thing. These people at the very top, I'm not talking about your favorite teacher down the street or your principal or the guy that works at Best Buy. We're all minions on a human farm, and it's culling season right now. And this small group of people, whether it's 10,000 to 50,000, they say that they could fit in a small office building, know exactly what's going on and do everything they can to surround us with choices and normalize us sedating ourselves and lowering our vibration and disconnecting us and keeping us separate and fighting, because it's a Marxist ideology of divide and conquer. It works very well with humans. We haven't figured it out yet. We're starting. We're waking up late to the game here, but some of us are starting to figure out, like, whoa, let's look up and see who the puppet master is. Why am I fighting with my fellow brother and sister? Why this isn't nature. They actually teach us that it's natural for us to be at war and clans, because look at history. Well, guess what? These people write the history books too.
Yeah.
And that's why I say to parents, drop it all. Just reconnect with your kids. Be in the moment with them like you are on any weekend day. You know, find your rhythm, because all of this is the Truman Show, and it's designed to hurt us. And I know I am the biggest self-saboteur of all time. I mean, I would, you know, work out for this and that, wine on the weekends, you know, what do you mean? What's the harm of one or two coffees? Like, I had no idea until, you know, it's like when you unravel a piece of yarn from your sweater and you just keep pulling it and pulling it and pulling it. So with the COVID, I have to thank COVID. What a blessing that it woke me out of a deep slumber and it made me question everything. And then when I realized, like, oh, coffee is one of the most toxic substances in the world that messes with our neurological system, is designed to depress us and gives us suicidal thoughts. Like, what?
Really?
Like, you know, when I started reading about that, wow. And when I'm like, oh, alcohol isn't good in moderation at all. It's carcinogenic. They've known that since 1989, but yet the Health Canada has increased the number of drinks that are safe to drink for human consumption weekly from 10 for women and 15 for men, but even an ounce of alcohol is carcinogenic for our body. So how is that, Health Canada? Why is that? But, you know, we've been born into this. It's not the fault of any of us, but it's just like climate change. I mean, don't tell me that there's not weather modification, chemtrails, and cloud seeding going on all over the place, and they haven't created these fires, and they've messed up the world, and then they tell us that it's our fault in order to lock us down. There's a climate lockdown going right now in Quebec, the province of Quebec right now. You can't go on trails. There's a curfew from this time to that time. So what this whole thing is happening right now is we are becoming pattern recognitionists, right? Forget the conspiracy theorist term. What's really going on is we're becoming pattern recognitionists, because these people that rule us are unable to connect with their divine, let's say, higher chakras, so to speak, like the part of you and I, the heart-centered human that cares for another one, that would say something like, there's no way the schools would be bad for us. I mean, they're so, look at all the people and the citizen watchdogs, and I know that one and this one, and there's no way anybody could be this evil to come together and create a massive plan to genocide and depopulate the planet. Like, there is a part of us, right? This naive, because we don't think like that, right?
Right.
We don't think like that. But these people have disconnected from their connection with God in order to align with evil. So they aren't even in the same realm. Like, we can't be thinking like them, but we have to finally see where it's being unveiled for us that this evil does exist, and it's infiltrated through every system of which we've been raised. And it's time to really have a look, because we cannot do anything unless we look. Like, everybody still wants to stick their head in the sand, even though the schools are on fire. They're on fire.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that lightly. And people are still like, well, we'll just wait another year. Or he's got to finish up that grade. Or, you know, if I told you that there was a school shooter that was coming in the next 6 months, but I didn't know what day they were coming, you would march down to that school, you would find your child, you would pull them out, and you would figure out every excuse and problem you're giving me for why you can't do it. Period.
Yeah.
And that's the sense of urgency that I am speaking about as I advocate these issues.
I agree with you. And the reason I started this podcast was because I knew nothing about homeschooling. I went to public school in like kind of inner city New York, upstate New York, not New York City. But my mother went and was in the workforce all the time, which now that I have researched into why the government was behind the women's movement of the 60s, it was to get a bigger tax base and to get a hold of our children earlier on. It makes just so much sense. But anyway, I never thought of myself as a homeschooler. So I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago, the fact that kids are having shooter drills, like shelter in place drills in school, it's a form of trauma-based mind control. When you think of what that is putting in their mind about guns, about their fellow students, this person might come shoot me, so I have to, you know, be really nice to them or whatever. The fact that you think the student body can turn against you, you know, your fellow student can turn against you at any time. Mm-hmm. And what is it putting into you should just always be in fear.
Look what they did with the bombs in the 50s and 60s. They were doing, they were doing those same acts for if the schools got bombed. So once you start to see the pattern, you realize the people that rule us, they just want us in a fear state all the time. Because when we're in a fear state, we're more susceptible to be sick, right?
Mm-hmm.
For whatever they're spraying out there,
mm-hmm.
we're more susceptible to be weak, sick, and dependent is what they need.
Yes.
So let's start them younger and younger
yes.
and make them fearful of one another. Because if we can make them fearful of one another, they won't unite. Because there's too many of us. If we unite on the same front, which I think will be the kids eventually here, it'll be about the kids and not the kids in school. It'll be about the kids, the trafficked children. But they don't want that. Because they know that when we figure out who they are, even though this is fifth generational warfare, their days are out.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of research on, and I want to do more on, well, the transgender ideology. Now, on paper, it looks like, oh, you should be kind to everybody, yada, yada. But here's the thing. When you realize what is behind that and the Chinese Revolution of, I think it was the 60s, it was Mao's cultural revolution. They were taking away gender and this was to bring in the communism. Once people don't have a gender, they are no longer attracted to each other. There is now no longer a need or a desire for a family unit. You have no desire to have children, and it is very easy to control people that don't have a familial bond. If they are just here as soldiers, they are much easier to control. And now you give them their reason for getting up in the morning. Their family and their, you know, their spouse, their children is no longer. And thinking about that with what is going on now, it is like, wow, yeah, but they blanket it. You know, package it up into, well, it's got to be the LGBT, you know, da, 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 da. And really, yeah, of course it has no place in schools. Why would somebody in a sexual, the way that they prefer sexual encounters have any place in a school? You should just teach kids to be kind to everybody. And then that will blanket it all, right? But no, that's not what their agenda is. And when you think about the communist agenda and what's been done in the past, I mean, it's just, it hasn't even been 60 years and it's already being repeated. But of course, we don't learn that in school because like you said, these are the people writing the history books as well.
Oh, 100%. Like we have pedophiles who are actually the ones that have created the sexual education curriculum up here in Canada, Ben Levin. He helped develop the SOGI 123. He was a convicted pedophile. He was in jail. He served 2 years for having child pornography, developing it and committing, you know, conspiring to commit sexual acts with children. I mean, just that fact alone, it should be revised, no?
Right?
No, but now it's mandatory and throughout the entire nation. We got Alfred Kinsey and John Money, who are the basis for your guys' curriculum, are absolute pedophiles. Their entire premise of pushing the sexual revolution was from fraudulent data based on pedophiles. So, you know, that they paid to create data to molest and rape children the ages 2 months old to 15. So, I mean, this is a deception on the American public. It was an absolute, but see, at the bigger conceptualization of this is that these individuals did not just, you know, do this on their own.
Right.
They were protected and they were selected, which begs the question, how many people are protecting pedophiles? Or is pedophilia some kind of cultural elite thing that goes on behind the scenes that we're all unaware of? Yes, but we never thought that before, in the sense of, like, that these people might be running our judicial system. They might be in our political system. They might be part of the monarchy. And wouldn't it make sense that they would all, in this, let's say it's a small group, they estimate that there's, on a low level, 60 million male pedophiles on the planet. You don't think that they would find each other? I mean, they find each other through social media. I mean, the distribution of the child being trafficked, there has to be. So what if there's actually this huge industry at play that's actually hidden from us, that is bigger than arms and drugs combined? And that's what this is really all about. So this gender ideology, like you said, you have to look back in history to understand what this is about and the tactics that they're using. Because like I said, these people aren't creative. They come and they use the same playbook all the time. Divide and conquer, divide and conquer. So what's the ultimate divide of a human being? Would be to actually cut off their genitalia and be so divided that they don't know biologically where they come from. To be so alienated from themselves that they will alienate themselves from their family or any strong community bond, clan, or clergy, right? I mean, they've done this with taking God out of schools. I'm not saying that I'm a proponent of church and synagogue. I'm Jewish. It doesn't really matter. The point is that there's something called critical theory, which came over from the Frankfurt School, which was a lot of German scholars who came over after the World War, who were disgusted with the freedom that Americans had, and they created this thing. And it's basically where you take every aspect of the American or free society and you criticize it and you find the victims in it, and then you get the victims to fight, and then they are all fighting each other. And it's really worked really well. I mean, even with the feminist movement, not to say that there aren't things that needed to change, Black Lives Matter, but then you realize, oh, you're all getting funded by George Soros, and you know, you have Marxists who are actually running the show. So anyone who gets a major platform is getting funded by these same people, mm-hmm. the same ones that you said earlier are actually pulling the puppet strings between the Democrats and the Republicans. I too was on the Trump train very briefly because it sounded really good at the beginning and that somebody was going to come save us and oh my God. And I mean, I couldn't be further from any of that. I realized that they all have a seat at the table in the big club mm-hmm. that which you and I, Cheryl, are not invited to.
No, we're not. George Carlin wasn't either. He told us.
Right, right. And so some play a villain, some play the good guy. Some play the villain over here. Some do this. It's just acting. This is a theater show, right? So the curriculum, the gender identity curriculum, it's the first step towards transgenderism. It's the first and the last step. The goal is transhumanism. So not only does it serve on many fronts with the depopulation, like you had explained very well, that people don't want to mate with each other anymore when they don't have an agenda, right? They've been doing this. There's been an attack on males for decades and feminizing them. You just have to look at a fashion magazine to see that. God help us. Some days I said, I went to the trucker convoy for 5 weeks. You know, I met some incredible men. So I should say there really are some great men. But, you know, like I was the mom out there working behind the scenes and thinking to myself, like, there's so many moms and grandmas here. Like, wouldn't it be really different if we could get 25,000 men off their couches from watching whatever football or hockey game and get them on the House of Parliament, on the lawn of Parliament, that would send a really different message. But they have done such a good job on brainwashing and controlling men and appeasing them through sports as a distraction, sedating them with Bud Light and beer, and Bud Light's a bad example, but you know what I mean? And it's not their fault either. It's through the movies. Like, here's another little tidbit. When you look at how much violent, repetitive content the average human sees just from movies and TV and social, you know, it makes sense that when a man is really being attacked, he is completely disassociated from his attacker because the brain doesn't know the difference between what it sees on the screen and what happens in reality. So if you've been conditioned to sit in a chair and watch a screen and constantly violent, repetitive content of movies and slashing and killing and this and that, then when it's actually happening in real time, you know, feels pretty good and comfortable to sit on the couch. I mean, it's just brilliant what they've done with the bioweapon of the TV.
The video games and with those virtual reality machines now, and I mean, I'm just throwing out Call of Duty. I've never played it. I don't know. I just, you know, from what I've heard, things like that, yeah, they're so realistic too. And it does, it just, your mind grows numb to it.
Yeah, why, you don't need to leave your basement. You just can be a basement dweller because you can't afford a house anyway. So you might as well live with your parents and live in the basement. You have your porn, you have your video games, you swipe left and right once in a while to go see, get a booty call on one of those apps. And hey, you're good. You don't need to actually talk to a woman. You don't actually need to have the hard day where you ask her out and she says no and picks the bigger guy and you go home and sulk about it and then hit it hard in the gym the next day and become a better man and upgrade, level up. No, no, no. You don't. So it's literally designed to take away the rite of passage of men to become men. So what we have is a bunch of beta boys running around that are wearing the jerseys of other men on their backs while they yell and throw hot dogs out by the side of the stands at some kind of sports game, you know? That's what we have.
I love
like
that.
We need to, men need to come back to being men. And we as women, that we as women have a place to support that.
100%. Now you're raising three boys.
That's right. I know. I got four men and they're all very men, you know.
So what are you doing to make sure, like, is part of your unschooling or just, you know, I guess, I mean, just your learning process of raising men, are you working on things like, hey, this is how we grow food. This is how you'd hunt. This is how you dismember a, I don't know what you have up there. We got deer here. But is that a conscious part of your education process in the home?
Absolutely. Yes and no. So the first and foremost, what I would say to parents is you can have your own ideologies of what you think, like what I just rambled off there. But more importantly is my connection with my children on a soul level. Is that what they want? I will never introduce something to them that they're not interested in or they're not ready for. So I can want them to be a hunter, but both of them, my kids, aren't really interested in that at this point. And I would never put that on them until they are. I mean, they're starting to see that where we get our cows from, that we deal with ranchers. Okay, this is what happens. We always bless our food. There's certain things that we do, you know, in the rhythms of our family, of the things I want to teach, but anything like that, it's, they're going to have to let me know. And they will. And they will. As for gardening, absolutely. They've been gardening for years. Now my parents have an acreage. We're moving stuff. We're getting chickens. We're doing those things. Absolutely. But the most important thing, what I found, especially for my boys and boys in general, is they need to be in their body. So like my 12-year-old, he's 6 feet tall. He's a big, big boy, right? And he is, boxing and he's doing TKO classes and he's into that kind of stuff. My other one is into ski racing, my little one, you know, so that's his thing is going for, but you know, and I just lead by example. I work out every day. My husband does too. You know, we have different things that we like and we're not always together or we come together, but we support them in learning how to use their body as a weapon one day. That's the ultimate goal. And I mean, that sounds really harsh, but sorry, not sorry. Like when you are in your body and you feel strength and you know that you can handle, you can walk into a store not wearing a mask like I did for 3 years, getting accosted or being prepared to, like I can handle myself because I know how strong I am and I feel strong. And so that is so important for men, because if we expect men, their birthright is to protect women and children and the most vulnerable and the elderly. And we are taking that away from them with this bullshit about toxic masculinity, with trying to subdue them or make them be more feminine, or telling them that we don't need them because we're women and we can do anything we want. We need them. And that's just what it is. And you want to know how fast you'll realize that? Get rid of them all and see how fast evil will be at the front door of us with our children, and we'll be begging for our men to come back. So this has been a slow drip. Like, we've been attacked equally. I'm not ragging on women, but women need to wake up too. Like, this is the biggest detriment to this war right now, is when the men finally wake up, and it'll probably happen with a financial crash because they're so connected to the money, right? Being the providers, and that might wake them up. Who knows what it'll be? But when they do, watch out.
Well, and that is directly linked to depression too, because when you aren't needed, well, of course you're going to be more depressed. When you have a purpose in life, you're not as likely to be depressed, you know, especially when you add it into working out, eating right, getting water, not taking all that. But, you know, and so everyone's depressed. Oh, okay, well, doctors just, well, here's your meds. Not what are you doing in your life to fix things. But at a higher level, exactly what you said, that really makes a lot of sense. When they don't feel needed in the home because, well, she makes as much as me or more, and you know, my wife can, my or what a girl, whatever, they can do whatever I can do, and yeah, they can kill the bugs. They don't need me to kill bugs anymore, you know. So wow, how much that damages their psyche.
Yeah,
when a male does not feel needed anymore.
And think about all the movies that you've watched in the past 10 years, like The King of Queens and the Adam Sandlers and the Will Ferrells, these infantilized men that are, it's always about divorce, or she left him because, you know, he's on the couch drinking a beer and she comes in from her full-time job with all the groceries and she treats him like, you know, I think of like Raymond, Everyone Loves Raymond. I mean, these women are constantly berating the men that they're with, like they're Olafs, right? And so the people who rule us also own Hollywood, and they know that what is on the screen will be seen within the society within a 72-hour period. So enough repetitive content to the human mind, and they will start to emulate that. So what are other programs that we see? Well, the girls just want to have fun. Like, how many bad moms and
Sex in the City and Friends for me.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Right. I grew up watching Sex and the City and Friends, and boy, that is how I lived my life. I don't care if I have kids or not.
Yeah.
And then, too, you know, here I am 2 decades later, like, I'm going to quit my government paying job and homeschool my kids with my chickens and try to get a cow to butcher. You know, it's like,
whoa. You've come a long way. But I was there, and I know that. And I watched those shows too. And I felt like that. I didn't know I was good. I didn't have my son till I was 31. My first son, I became a stepmom. Jack was 5, and it was my second marriage, and I was like, I don't know. I don't want kids. And it was my husband who was like, she needs a child to heal herself. I want to have a baby. Like, it was him that was pushing for it. And I was like, and I wasn't getting pregnant right away. I know it was probably 10 years of partying and doing what, I mean, honestly, I didn't know. I didn't care. And like, thank God I had them.
And all the birth control that they just feed us.
Oh, and all the, I was on it for 15 years. Yeah. I mean, and so, and then I have him, and like, that's why in some of my posts, I'll say there's a darkness trying to diminish this holiness. It was a rite of passage to become a mother. Mm-hmm. It's part of evolution. And that's not to knock people who've made the choice not to, or people who aren't mothers. No, but I will say this. When I was a stepmom, I remember I was with a friend, and she was talking about something, and she was basically saying to me that you don't really know until you're a mother. And I was so offended by that, because I was a stepmom and I was a social worker that worked with kids, and I thought I loved kids, and I was so upset about that. But when I finally had my own, I knew what she meant. And that is what we say to these teachers who don't have children, who say they have the rights, or they can teach this because they love the children too. And they're going to like, no. You're teaching all these people's children and you're paid to do it. I'm the parent. You don't love my child, like I love my child. Mm-hmm. You never will. Okay, so let's get that straight. But, you know, they've been handed down the rhetoric of what to say too, right? The virtue signaling, you know, social justice warrior that's going to save all these trans kids from jumping out of the building and killing themselves. So I'm going to be the safe space for your kid, me, in my class, and they can come out and they can be themselves and I won't tell you. You don't need to know, parents. You're the one driving them this to this madness, right?
Yes.
It's a program.
It's hard. There is, I talk about having a mourning period where I like mourn this, even just being the liberal. And it's like, and I have to remember this with like the coworkers that have, you know, really done me wrong. They think they are doing the right thing. They think I've been brainwashed and yes. have, and now evil. Or racist or, you know, whatever, but they're still in the matrix. And I used to say ignorance is bliss. And it really is, you know, sitting in the basement with your beer and your virtual reality and your booty calls. But you know what? When you have children, it's no longer about you. And we have to look at it as like, this is the future for like all the children, for humanity, really. So this whole, you know, oh, you're going to take your kids out of school and teach them at home. That's barbaric. But it's like, what do you think happened before, you know, we got all buses? I mean, when people were living in farms, you know, 10 miles away and there weren't buses, kids were educated at home. It's not that far. It's not that outlandish. And then, you know, when you think about bringing kids into the institution of school at a young age, well, now they're not at home learning the farming. They're not learning how to grow food. So now they're adults. Now they're dependent on the government to put food on the shelves at their local grocery store. And then where did the food go? I mean, you can't even, there's a dairy farm across the street from me. You can't even buy milk legally from them because it has to go through the whole processing thing. The government will not let them sell it. It has to go through a form of chemicalization before it can even get to our grocery store shelves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they don't want you to have raw milk, which is actually what actually serves the body. I know. I mean, they're trying to kill us. Let's be real, okay? The schools are on fire. Anyone who's listening to this, you know, I'm doing a presentation on June 25th with Jason Kristoff, live, free for the public. Him and I are in a little bit of a game. How many kids can we save, you know, first wins, you know, like, I mean, he's done far more work than I, but it's just a joke he likes to say. But truthfully, he's going to get into the past, this old ruling occult that uses child sacrifice as a practice and is very familiar with it and has been doing it all the time. They're just doing it out in the open now. So that's how bold they are with how far they've come with their agenda. So he'll be getting into that. I'll be getting into the actual dark agendas that are in the current public school system, from, you know, the sex curriculum to the critical race theory to the climate hysteria to the collectivism to the medical euthanasia program. So I'll be touching on all that, and then there'll be a Q&A after. But for people who you know, are fence sitters or have a family member that doesn't understand, this will be a nice little package for people to kind of see that. But, you know, Cheryl, you're right. Everyone else, you know, under their mind control program. And just so you know, when you take the sedatives, the alcohol, the coffee was actually used back in the days of the Pharaoh and then really took a stand in the UK and the monarchy as tea time for the slaves way back, because you could push two or three more hours out of them in the afternoon. And I've actually seen studies with caffeine where you have a spider on LSD, marijuana, alcohol, cocaine, and caffeine. And the spider web is the worst with the caffeine. And if you are thinking I'm crazy or I don't know what I'm talking about, I did read the book. It's called Caffeine Blues by something Chinesky.
I can link it in the show notes.
I have it with me right here. But anyway, look it up. It's called Caffeine Blues. You can see for yourself. But here's the thing. Don't just see for yourself. Try it for yourself like I did. Like, go off of it for 3 months and then try to ingest it again into your body. Your body will tell you right then and there, oh, my God, get this out of me. I couldn't see for probably about 2.5 minutes. I had stars in my eyes when I accidentally ended up having a latte that wasn't decaf after about 3 months. So the experiment works. Try it for yourself. Same with every toxin that we ingest. You know, once you get rid of it, there it's when you reintroduce it, you realize you go back to that childlike state. You remember when you first smelled alcohol or you smelled coffee when you were a child and you were like, ugh, there's a reason for that. But the mind control makes us, because we want to fit in with the herd, you know, you start smoking when you're 13 with your friends out back at the school or whatever. Now it's vaping, you know, and it just goes and goes and goes. I mean, God, you guys, if school cared about us, they'd be teaching the kids about all of these drugs and what they do, including caffeine, including alcohol. They'd be teaching them about how to have good, solid relationships, about the fiat currency and what's happened, about how to, you know, how to be able to spot propaganda versus marketing. They would do, I mean,
right. They're not grow, teaching how any to of grow that. Food. I mean, they don't even teach that.
How to grow food.
How to make clothing, you know?
No. So if you want your child to end up the way the government wants your child to end up, by all means, send them to public school. But if you don't, and you want them to be critical thinkers with high moral values and a moral compass that can't be bought, then you better take them home.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are scared or, you know, like, oh, I don't know if I can handle the pressure of doing it right. Will my kid know enough? But you were talking earlier about the bond between you and them, just having time where you're not on a phone, they're not on a screen. You're really just cultivating a relationship, a deep relationship. And that's what it's about. It's not about this vision of I'm a good mom because I wake them up before their body's ready and I rush them off to school while I go to work. And then I, you know, pick them up and I'm rushing to put something on the table or God forbid going through a drive-through. And then we're rushing them to soccer practice or baseball or whatever. And then we're all coming back and everyone's getting showered and packing up for the next day and going to bed. And meanwhile, but society tells us that you're a good parent if you do that.
If you're doing that. Yeah, like because they want you exhausted.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you probably never even had a meaningful conversation throughout that whole day. I mean, you probably, how was school? Good. How was practice? Good. But you're not having a meaningful conversation and getting a deep bond with your children and your family. And so that should be the takeaway from this for parents too, to like take the pressure off. It doesn't have to be this curriculum and that curriculum, and we didn't do 3 hours of schooling today, or we only got through one library book today. Or, you know, it doesn't matter. Did you have a conversation with your kid today? And I'm guilty of it too. Did I put down my phone and sit and have an eye-to-eye talk? You know, I need to definitely do that.
Well, number one, comparison kills joy. So that is usually the biggest concern for parents when they're due in this process. And it was for me too. What if my kid's behind? And this is where I say it is very important to get some mentorship and find a community of like-minded to start the growth and the releasing of toxic beliefs that you yourself have through just being in the school system yourself. I had them too. And then when I realized that comparison kills joy, so of course they would have standardized testing, you know, nationally and on a state level and a city level, because the more you compare, the more you can control, the more you can make decisions about this and that. None of it is important. I mean, connection before correction, always. And you can use everything as a tool of connection. Baking, you can play video games with them. I mean, technology is a whole other matter. We can talk at a later date, but, you know, the idea that they're going to be behind what? Let me tell you something right now. There's not going to be universities in 10 years from now, because when people wake up and understand that the universities are complicit and the government and the money and the funding and who's been supporting who, we're going back to apprenticeship. We're going back to the old basics, you know, God, community, homeschooling. That's what's happening, where we grow our own food. Now, there might be a group of the population or a sector that's too late. They're never going to change. They're going to go into the AI. They're going to go get the chip. They're going to go stand in their line for their food rations. But the rest of us, they're, you know, certainly listening to your podcast here. That's not where we're going. So there are actual books out there called Unschooling to University. If you, by Judy Arnell, there's another one you can link in your show notes. If you are really concerned, but my biggest message to you as parents is to get involved. Like, I have a community, Monday nights we meet on Zoom all across the world. We talk about unschooling matters. There's questions that can be asked. We watch things together, you know, get a coach like I did. I do some coaching. I don't have a lot of time for coaching these days, but I do have a community and a membership in play. And start reading, start opening your minds, because it's us that needs to get out of the way. Our children learn all the time. They learn all the time. We don't even need to be. I don't consider myself a teacher, the teacher. I don't. I can facilitate. I bring things when they tell me. I trust that they will let me know when they need to know more, when they want to know more, when they're interested in something, when there's an obstacle in their way. Even their obstacles can become their path. This is a journey of partnership. We are going from the authoritative paradigm of which we've all been raised into a peaceful partnership with our children, hand in hand, you know, there to guide, but not, right? And I'm not saying it's completely child-led. Like, people think they have erroneously believed that unschooling means uneducated, and it means they're wild and free, and it lacks the daisical parenting, and that couldn't be further from the truth. It actually is forcing you to become more present, more in tuned, you know? And it's a beautiful thing. And if you are into freedom on any spectrum of the scale, and that is what you're looking for, you have to look on a macro level of what you're upset with. Let's say with our current governments and this world takeover that's happening of tyranny. And you look at that and go, okay, where am I like that at home? Where am I like that with my own children? Where do I impose my will on my children? Where am I tyrannical to my husband, to my children? Where do I say that I'm right and you must do what I do? I mean, these are all things, and I know it's progress, not perfection. So don't get overwhelmed by what I'm saying, but these are all things that I've walked through to the other side of. And that's part of reclaiming your freedom and reconnecting with your children and living in harmony with them. And unschooling is what we always did. It's what we always did before this experiment gone bad by an evil group of people with some good people working in it. I'm not going to knock the good teachers that tried their best, but I have heard from teachers. They reach out to me all the time and they want to use my platform to share from within. And teachers will say to me, the biggest lie we were taught is that you have to change the system. You have to work in the system and be in the system to change the system.
I have teachers that have been on the show who left the profession to homeschool their children. So I definitely agree with that. Tell the folks where they can find you. And I will also put links to the conference that you're doing and everything else that you mentioned, the books, in the show notes. But just let them know where they can find you again.
Yeah, I'm at Unschooling Our Kids, O-U-R, Unschooling Our Kids on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, Tasha Fishman. And you can go to my website, TashaFishman.com, to get a hold of me. Send me an email if you have questions or concerns, or if you want to be involved in our community.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tasha. This was great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard, please consider helping me out by sharing this podcast with friends, with your homeschool community, and even to your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. As a new podcast, we're really trying to get our episodes out there so that we can keep going. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show and tell us about your homeschooling experience, email me at thehomeschoolhowto@gmail.com or visit thehomeschoolhowto.com and send me a message through Facebook or Instagram. Thank you for your time and for your love of the next generation. We'll see you next week.